Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Ben. How are you this fine morning?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I haven't actually opened my curtains yet because my bedroom is south-facing and I was already woken up by the sunlight going round my curtains, and I know that as soon as I open them, this room's going to get really warm.
Right, that's the...
And so I'm hiding.
The thing with south-facing, it would be advertised as a benefit. Beautiful south-facing lounge window.
It's not, though.
It's not, it gets hot.
It's just unbearably warm most of the time. I've got no ventilation. I live in a flat. I can't even open my door, my windows all the way.
No, they only open 2 inches. We had
to... slither out.
When I lived in some... halls of residence or student flat or something, I don't remember exactly where it was, we had to sign a thing that said if we want to be able to open the windows wider than that, like, we had to basically say it's not your fault if we fall out.
Right.
And we had to, like, it was like a legal waiver.
I would sign something like that, though.
Yeah.
I just want full window autonomy. I don't understand why I can't. I'm old enough to live on my own and pay for this flat every month.
Yeah.
Why can I not be trusted to open the window?
I don't know. Maybe, have you got previous?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well,
I used to throw, like, paper aeroplanes out, and it was majestic. But then the police got involved.
They don't want you doing any more of that. It was distracting drivers. Look, they were
it follows me.
Watching the majestic planes go.
They don't let me do it anymore.
No.
Anyway, this is a video game podcast. Oh. It's brought to you each and every week by a very real sponsor. They help us keep the lights on here. Peter, have you got the ad read there?
I have. I've got an ad read right here. It's a brand new... Well, it's not a brand new, actually. It's a sequel to an established franchise. It's coming to... It's out now on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4, I think, and on PC. It's called World Soulstorm. God World Soulstorm.
Okay.
It's a game in which you wander around God World, which is actually just heaven, but they like to call it God World up there. That's what they think of themselves. And the rain starts coming down, and you start singing a bit of gospel music. You know, you got that soul, you got the rhythm of the Lord flowing through you. So what you do, you just go up to heaven and have a little sing song in all weathers, in praise of the Lord.
The rhythm of the Lord.
The rhythm of the Lord is a powerful
thing. Is that a thing?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
He is the Lord of the dance.
He is.
Said he.
Abe. The Lord of the Dance. It's very good. It's an excellent game. It's available right now. And if you don't play it, you will go to hell. Or Devil World, as it's called.
Whoa, yeah. Bad World.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's on, what did you say it was on? It was on the PlayStation.
PlayStation 4 and 5 and the PC. Or the JC, if you
want. The JC. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Perfect. I can't wait to... pray it.
Yeah, me neither. except you won't be praying it at all because it's not actually real.
Oh, I thought my heathen soul could finally be soothed and tamed by this wonderful Jesus game.
Well, I mean, he's still available to you at all good churches, but
no, it's
not
too late.
Not on your PlayStation.
If only there was something I could. It's too late.
There's
no resolving this.
No point. Other options in terms of pursuing the Christian dogma.
Never mind, eh? Mm. We'll get him next time.
We'll get him next time.
No, it is not a real sponsor. We are, of course, sponsored by our wonderful patrons who are actually real over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. $1 per month gets you access to the podcast post we put up on a Monday or a Tuesday, usually a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We're recording earlier this week.
Yes.
And then we can source questions from there, exclusively from there. We do have other tiers available on Patreon as well. If you'd like to support us at a higher tier, go check it out. patreon.com/teamtriplejump.
Yeah, do it. Sorry, I was waiting for you to ask me who'd asked the very first question. But actually, that would be the wrong thing to do, because first we need to know, where are we walking?
Oh, through God world?
Through God world. It's okay. It kind of makes me think that maybe God world, rather than heaven, in the very real sponsor that I didn't just make up, it could have been a theme park. A religious theme park.
Oh, that sounds tame.
Yeah.
What about heaven is a half pipe, after all, as we all learned from that song?
It is.
So what about just a sick half pipe?
Escape park. God world. Welcome to God world.
Welcome to God world. Here's your bony board. That's what they call them.
Right, yeah.
The cool skaters. Here's your bony board.
Instead of a harp, you get given a skateboard on arrival.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, here we are in God world, and it's time for question one from Jack, who says, "Hi Ben and Peter, I recently played Hidden Agenda with a few friends and loved it, but this game seems like an outlier in app-assisted games, with most being minigame or quiz-related. I was wondering, do you see apps playing a larger part in games, or will they forever be used as a tool in party games? Thanks, Jack." Well, thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
I mean, first off, I would say these things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. I think they will always be used as a tool in party games. I think that'll probably be perhaps even the primary use for this sort of genre or this medium going forward. However, I do think there are things that can be done in this realm and therefore will be done to varying levels of success. We played Hidden Agenda together, kind of around the time it came out, I think. And you've since played it at least once, I know. Maybe a couple of times with
a few times,
people. Yeah. Yeah. And, I thought it was a lot of fun. And I quite like the idea of, you know, companion apps for games. So you could play a regular console game, but maybe there's something that is happening either at the same time on your phone, or like other people can be getting involved in your game via their phones. I'm trying to think of an example desperately. But I guess almost in a way akin to the DS or the 3DS, you know, with the two screens. And like sometimes you would have something different on one of the screens that was kind of a useful extra that maybe you didn't need, but it was there. It was a handy little, you know, it was a map or a... I mean, I
your
don't
inventory.
Know. Yeah, your inventory or something like that. And I mean, I'm not a video game creative, unfortunately. It's not my job to come up with good ideas for video games. But I kind of wonder if there's some kind of co-op thing that you could do where, in order to, so maybe like one of you plays as the main character, and you could always pass the controller around if you wanted to, and take turns on that. But it could be something as quote unquote as much of a real game as, like, I don't know, Devil May Cry or something like that. So you're going around playing like a hack and slash RPG or something, but your friends could be there with their phones. They've all got these apps, and maybe they're doing all these like little mini games at the same time, and their success will affect your strength or something. You know, they're fighting off demons. They're maybe inside your head or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there could be that kind of almost a multi-format thing where you're all playing through the same game together, but you're doing different things at the same time. I don't know. I think it's there's something there. So I think there will definitely be uses for apps outside of quizzes and mini games and stuff. Although I do think the party game stuff will always probably be the main use, personally.
Yeah, we've definitely had companion apps in the past.
We have.
I think Destiny definitely had one, and it was really popular in sort of late PS3, early PS4 era, that sort of time. I'm using that console specifically just because that's what I was playing. You can substitute that for Xbox One or 360 if you want. It was really popular then, and it seemingly dropped away almost completely now. I'm sure some games do still have companion apps where you can check which quests you're doing and what level gear you've got, but this really doesn't serve much of a purpose beyond that, and is more just sort of a marketing tool than anything else. Doesn't really serve any purpose practically. I can't say that I ever used any companion apps properly, apart from, like, you know, I had to go to work and I couldn't play a video game all day, and so I would just, when I was bored, look at what was going on in Destiny briefly and then delete it because it didn't do anything. But I really do think Hidden Agenda is sort of an outlier in this, just in reality. I was going to say in the scenario Jack presented in terms of moving forward with app-based controls in games and stuff, because there aren't really many games like it. And if you're not familiar with what Hidden Agenda is, it was part of an initiative that Sony did for a few years called Playlink, which was a series of games where you and your friends could use your phones as the controller. And it was largely quiz games and party games. But Hidden Agenda was made by Supermassive, who are the people behind Until Dawn, and most recently Man of Medan and Little Hope, the Dark Pictures anthology. And it was basically a police drama where you played a detective investigating a serial killer, and you all had to use your phones to vote on what you wanted to do, from dialogue to various decisions. Sometimes you'd have like a front-on view of a room, and you all had a little sort of cursor that you had to scan around the room and find all the clues before the timer ran out. So it was quite innovative. I don't think it's the first game that's done that necessarily, but it was certainly perhaps the highest profile one and really bucked the trend.
Yeah.
Of using your phone to control. And it wasn't like Jackbox where you could just do it through the web browser. You actually had to download a specific companion app. And while you were watching cutscenes, there was like a bibliography thing that could be updated, and you could... is bibliography the right word? Is that what I'm thinking of?
I'm trying to remember what happened when you were watching cutscenes.
Well, it just said look at the TV, but basically there'd be a little book that you could press and you could read up on big story events and the background of characters you'd met and stuff like that, so everyone could stay in the loop on what's going on.
A bit like with the Supermassive games show the sort of tree of, you know, the kind of the butterfly effect.
Yes,
the events
exactly.
That happened. Yeah,
and it was far more stripped back in that, you know, you weren't actually controlling a character and walking them around a 3D space as you would with an actual controller. But it was really good fun, and they've not done anything like it since. And Playlink is dead now, and for that reason, they really, unless more big companies get behind it, I don't think we'll see anything like that again. I think it will largely be the realm of party games and quizzes and stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but Hidden Agenda was really good, and I would love to see more of that. And there was actually a Planet of the Apes game that they also released that was in a similar vein. I think it's meant to be a bit crap, though.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe check that out, Jack. But yeah, moving forwards, unless one of the big players gets involved and says, no, we're going to really lean into this. Sony does this a lot, as we're going to get into, I think, in the big discussion.
Yeah.
Where they'll be like, we'll try this thing and we'll make something really cool that's got a lot of promise. Maybe isn't perfect. And then we'll just abandon it. And everyone will lament the fact that nobody works in that space anymore. because even though there are people working in that space, you need a big player in there to really bring it, not legitimacy, but sort of prove that it is a viable avenue for other big players to get in on. And it seems that Sony's kind of just abandoned that, which is a shame.
Yeah, I mean, but thinking about the party game stuff, I mean, almost, it depends really on what your definition is, because if you think about Hidden Agenda, although it had this very, you know, quite a gritty veneer to it, and it was this murder mystery, as you say, like a police detective drama thing. Mm. And yes, it had a strong narrative to it and different directions you could go. In terms of gameplay, it wasn't, you know, it was still relatively simple. You would wave your thing around and, you know, vote on decisions to make, and you know, it wasn't super complicated. As you say, you don't move your character around in that sense. So to what extent does that even count as not a party game, but it's still everyone just sitting around on the sofa? You can kind of be just having drinks at the same time and, like, you know, not take it too seriously and only just sort of barely pay attention, all that kind of stuff. It's quite a casual thing to play despite the nature of the story. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that, yes, party games going forward, as we know them, and like quizzes and stuff, the things that you associate with those terms in your head, those will be the, I think, the bread and butter of any kind of app-based stuff on console gaming. But I don't see it as a big leap to go from something like even Jackbox. Jackbox could come up with, you know, I can imagine just, I mean, maybe stylized in a different way. It might be more comic book, graphic novel style, but just a kind of short little murder mystery where everyone has a character to play or something like that. It's not a complicated game in my head that I could see, like, feasibly being lumped in with these other games that we call party games and quiz games and stuff. So I don't think they're poles apart, these things. I think you're right that Hidden Agenda had some kind of prestige to it, or it was the most successful of its kind. But I'd like to think that the likes of Hidden Agenda, you know, it's not completely dead. It depends kind of what you define as a Hidden Agenda style game, really, and where the line is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I hope we see more, and I'm absolutely not saying that the likes of Jackbox are, you know, amateur hour, simple,
no.
Easy peasy.
But they're a different kind of thing.
Absolutely. I'm taking the definition of what Hidden Agenda did as Jack says, an app-assisted game, being a highly polished, produced, decently acted, and visually really good-looking game that was 2 to 3 hours long, that told a story that twisted and turned, and yeah, it wasn't perfect, and you can pretty much only play through it once because you may get a different outcome, but the killer's always the same, so you know what's going to happen if you play it through again. Seemingly just sort of abandon that approach. Like, you could have taken out the walking around sections of Man of Medan and retrofitted that to work as an app, you know, that everyone could play up to, well, I think it's like 7 players, I think, can play, or 8 mm-hmm. people can play Hidden Agenda. And I think that would work brilliantly, because I don't think you'd really lose anything from those games by not having to slowly walk around to interact with stuff. You know, I think you could do an app version. However, that would still take a lot of resources, and I don't see something, at least on that scale, being bundled in with a new Jackbox. I'm sure they could do something similar, but again, just not on the sort of the dedicated scale that Hidden Agenda was.
Yeah, and visually, certainly, it would have to be different, because Agenda was, you know, the kind of photorealistic or a realistic style that...
It was on the Until Dawn engine or whatever use for the other stuff. But yeah, it was a really good game. I sincerely hope they do more, but I'm not confident, sadly. I think Jackbox will just continue to rule the roost, and I look forward to seeing the new styles of party games that they bring to their future collections and stuff. Maybe we'll get one of these, you're right.
Yeah.
Hidden Agenda 2, part of Jackbox 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
It's perhaps.
It's 4 hours long. Incredible.
That'd be lovely.
It's time to move on to what we playing.
Oh, what we playing? Okay.
It's what we play in time. Peter, what are you playing this week?
I've been playing this week, as you all know, dear audience, if you've been keeping up with our content, I've been playing the Evercade this week, which was lovely. So you can expect a more detailed breakdown of the games I've been playing on that in a video that hopefully went out on Friday, but maybe didn't, but probably did. So I've been through kind of several different periods of video game history, really.
What is it, though? What is the Evercade?
Our Evercade is a handheld console which has various cartridges you can pop into the back, and they are collections of arcade slash early home console video games. I guess early home console video games themselves mostly contained arcade games, really, so it's all the same. But yeah, so I've played some simple, well-known, quote-unquote classics, like Asteroids and Pac-Man and Centipede and things like that. Some, you know, real old 8-bit stuff, which definitely fun to sit down and have a few goes with. But there's some much longer, or not necessarily longer, but more complex or deeper video games than the likes of Pac-Man available on the Evercade. For example, Earthworm Jim is on there, which is one that I'm looking forward to playing more of. But I definitely had a go with that, and it's everything that I kind of already knew about. I've never played it before. I'm of course aware of Earthworm Jim, but it's kind of what I expected from it in a good way. It's very stylized. Some really weird kind of animations where he uses his worm head as a kind of, well, just like a hand, basically. He grips things with it and stuff like that. And, I mean, even in the first level, I was kind of a bit thrown in a nice way by the just the overall design and the art direction of the game, in that I kind of jumped off this ledge and then I fell into this pit full of tires, just piles and piles of car tires. You know, like in The Simpsons, they've got the tire fire in Springfield. Yeah. It was just like that. And it's bouncy because tires are made of rubber, right? So you bounce through this weird area full of tires all stacked up, which was sort of strange. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying these 16-bit games more, really, because they are from, I mean, I kind of vaguely remember games like that from my very, very early days of gaming on the PS1. So, it's been good. I tried Joe and Mac 2. That's like a caveman game. I've described in detail both bad dudes and two crude dudes in the
Hell
quips
yeah.
games, but I'm going to leave those for you to go and to go and listen to, dear listener. So there's a lot to go at with the Evercade. I don't want to just list every single game I've played. I pretty much did that in the Quipscope, but it's not Quipscope, but the conversation we had. But it's there's so much to go at, and I've still got like 4 cartridges I've not even touched yet. So I'll likely be testing each game for probably at least another week. So next week, I'm sure I'll have more Evercade to talk about. It's well worth giving a go, and if you want more detail, go and listen to the video that's on the channel right now.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What about Star Wars? Have you played any more of that?
Yes, I have. Well, I streamed it this week, so I didn't play any in my downtime because I didn't want to over Star Wars myself. Although, I mean, saying that, I think at the tail end of last week, yeah. So since we last did a podcast, I have actually played a little bit more. It's hard to remember sometimes what was before or since the most recent podcast, but Star Wars, I'm still enjoying that. It's as I said at the time, in the Quipscope we did for that as well, it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a grind, it's, you know, to, you really just need to know what you're letting yourself in for going, giving that game a go. Like, it's a game of its time. It's from the mid-noughties. It's an FPS, So there are lots of sections where you do just kind of have to hold down the trigger and kill lots and lots of enemies in a fairly mindless way. But the fact that it's set in the Star Wars universe and, you know, again, it's giving me a bit of a taste for The Bad Batch, which is coming up soon, less than a month now. I'm really enjoying it from that perspective. So certainly as a Star Wars fan, it's a good game to play, and another one I would recommend to people in that camp. But, you know, you do have to prepare yourself for the fact that it is a game from 2005, I think. So, yeah, it's good. It's fine. But it won't be everyone's cup of tea, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you?
I started Batman Arkham City up the other day.
Right.
Because I had finished off, I think it was Kentucky Route Zero that I finished off, and then I just didn't really feel like starting anything brand new. And I did actually sit there for a couple of evenings just watching TV, thinking, I don't really want to play anything right now.
Yeah.
Kind of gamed out. But I was thinking about it, and I got the urge to hop back into Batman Arkham City, which I haven't played since it came out in, God, 2012? 2013? Something like that? 2012, okay. I think. Oh. And it's aged. So this is part of the Arkham Collection, or the Return to Arkham Collection that was ported to PS4 and Xbox One. And I believe it was released on Plus at some point. So I played Arkham Asylum last year and talked about it on the podcast. And now I'm giving Arkham City a go. And I remember loving Arkham City. And again, I've talked about why on the podcast before. Like, I just got super excited for it. And I really enjoyed it. And I've got to say, having played Arkham Asylum last year, I think Arkham Asylum holds up better than City does. I think City's still an excellent game, but I think the scope and the openness of Arkham City and being able to explore that environment while not having the benefit of the developments of traversal and moving around the city that Arkham Knight introduced, the third game in the series, really does make it feel a bit clunky. I still really like it. It's not aged particularly gracefully from a graphical perspective. Again, I think the moodier tone, they're all moody games, but the moodier, more claustrophobic and enclosed tone of Arkham Asylum, I think, has held up the best. And Arkham City, it does just feel a bit, there's a lot going on. The character models are kind of hideous. And at times it can feel a bit unfocused, like I'm wanting to experience the story, not really looking to do the side stuff, because I've done all that before and I just want to be Batman and get through that story. But on the way there, you know, there's thugs all over the place that you can take out, and there's like a million different Riddler things to do. And I know there were a million different Riddler things to do in the first game, but, you know, it was far more linear. It was a bit more Metroidvania-y in that you had to backtrack on yourself. But here, I do find myself just sort of spamming R1 to grapple up things and then sort of glide off them. But you don't really hold your glide for very long until, you know, you're having to grapple again. And as I said, you can't really use the cool stuff they introduced in Arkham Knight to make you glide further and keep moving for longer. I still think it's excellent, and I'm obviously going to continue to play it. But I was quite surprised, actually, going back to a question that we had last week about games that don't really appear how you remember them. This one definitely doesn't. I still think it's very good, but I am kind of shocked at how much I actually preferred the presentation and gameplay of Asylum over this one, bearing in mind how much I loved City when it came out.
Well, especially like when a much improved sequel to any given game comes out. I mean, you know, particularly going back to the first Uncharted game, I always find that. Like, I remember first playing that and thinking, this is great, and I don't think I really thought at the time that, oh, there's a lot of gunplay here, but there is a lot of gunplay in that game. And then when you go from even just Uncharted 2 and 3, but certainly the fourth game, if you go back to number one, it's like, wow, this, I mean, it's, again, it's a bit more mindless than the others, this game. So,
yeah. And Knight's divided opinion. Like, a lot of people don't like Arkham Knight. And I can understand that. It took a lot of creative chances that didn't really pay off, and it was a mess on PC, and and so on. But certainly you can't dispute the fact that getting around the city and not talking about the Batmobile was a lot easier to do. And that only comes with the benefit of having had Arkham City to build off. So Arkham City, very much a first draft in terms of open world traversal. So, yeah, I'll stick at it. I'll keep playing it. God knows when we're going to get those new Batman games now that they've all been delayed and pushed off into the distance. But, yeah, Arkham City, not quite how I remember it. So there we are. Persona 4, obviously still playing that. And I've also been playing a load of original Xbox games as well that I'll cover in a video at some point. But my God, as I've spoken to you about, Peter, the Duke controller, I just can't use it. I don't like it. It feels so wrong.
I think I said to you at the time when you told me that I remembered not having a problem with it, but that was after... I mean, I think the first time I picked it up, I definitely thought, what is this? Like, I feel like both of my hands
dinner have been plate.
Stung by bees and I'm all swollen and weird and chunky. But definitely, like, after a while, I got very used to it. And I dare say that the muscle memory buried deep inside my head would probably reactivate if I picked up a Duke controller. I don't think I'd have as much of an issue with it as you are having at the moment, but I do feel for you, because I remember first picking one up and thinking, this is an abomination.
I am certain it's a case of getting used to it. It doesn't help that I'm currently playing with about 3 or 4 different controllers. So I'll have my PS5 controller, I'd have my PS4 controller, I have this stupid great big Xbox Duke controller, and then we recorded an episode of Worst Games yesterday at the time of recording the podcast, and I use an Xbox One controller, a wired one, on my PC.
I use a PS4 controller.
I used to use a PS4 controller, and then there was one game that I wanted to play, and this is again talking about Sony, I wanted to play Oblivion on stream, and I didn't want to buy it on PC, and it was available on PlayStation Now.
Right.
And so I downloaded the PlayStation Now client for PC, and at the time, I think it may have changed now, it didn't accept a PS4 controller as an input.
Wow. Okay.
And I had to get... I went up to Tesco and bought an Xbox controller just for it. The point is... Using that Xbox controller, the modern one, is night and day, and it's so much. It just juxtaposes how ridiculous that original controller was.
Yeah,
and I'm so glad that they changed it. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to use. Anyway, that's what I've been playing.
Wonderful. Well, it's time to move on to question 2.
This is from Cameron J. Keywood, who says, "Hello, Bean and Petter. I am a long-time listener, first-time patronee, expecto patrona," it says in parentheses. "Anywho, I am a games design student and hope to break into the industry in the next year, so I may feature on Worst Games Ever in 2025.
Oh, Cameron.
My question is, what is your opinion on cutscenes? Personally, I used to skip cutscenes when I could and hate non-skippable cutscenes, but now appreciate the work that goes into them. I would love an industry standard where you can skip upon a second viewing. Thoughts?"
I think it was in a list, might have been something else, but and it might not have even gone out yet. It might be been something I've checked and okayed to go onto the channel, but isn't public. But recently in a video, I say, "Oh, I hate skipping cutscenes. I never do it." And then the editor immediately cuts to me in a Worst Games Ever episode, going, "Can we skip this? Can we skip this?" So. I might come across as a bit of a hypocrite. However, I think Worst Games Ever is very much an exception. Like, those games are all awful. They normally have dire cutscenes that we just want to get through. So yeah, I do skip cutscenes on Worst Games Ever. Also, saves me a bit of editing time if the capture isn't as long. So that's probably part of it. However, I never, ever, ever skip cutscenes the first time round when I'm playing a game. And I've never understood people who do. It would bother me. I'd be worried that I'd miss something really important. Not just in terms of, will I be able to solve a puzzle? Have I missed some information? But just, you know, the story or understanding character motivations or anything like that. You know, everyone's entitled to their own gaming proclivities, and if they want to skip cutscenes, that's fine by me. But I ain't spending any time on skipping cutscenes, because I mean, I'm thinking about as well just the work that's gone into them. I mean, that shouldn't really, I don't think that should make you think that you can and can't do something when you're gaming. Like, oh, well, someone worked really hard on this, so I better not do X thing. However, that is definitely something that is probably worth considering in this discussion. But I do think, on the other hand, that all cutscenes should be skippable. All cutscenes should also be pausable as well. I mean, that's still not universal. It's certainly way more common now than it used to be, but that was always dreadful when a cutscene is happening and your mum comes into the room and she's like, "What? Can you come downstairs and hoover the lounge?" "Well, yeah, mum, I'll do it in a minute. Oh, and by the way, your grandma called," and you know, something really important's happening on the screen. So all cutscenes should be pausable, and I think they should all be skippable. Preferably not skippable by just pressing the X button, because that can sometimes be done accidentally. What you should have to do is pause the cutscene with the start button and then select skip cutscene, so you can't accidentally do it. But
or
yeah,
hold a button.
Or hold a button, yeah. But I agree, they should all be skippable for either the people who just want to skip them, like the young version of Cameron, before Cameron realised the work that goes into these.
God, can you imagine being young Cameron?
I know, disgusting.
Oh, Christ.
Or for the likes of, well, probably everyone else who, if you've played through a game over and over and you're not that bothered about a certain cutscene, or perhaps if you've if you die and you keep respawning or, you know, reloading, and it plays the cutscene every time, you know, you don't want to see that every time. That can get really annoying, actually. So yeah, they should all be skippable, they should all be pausable, but I do not skip cutscenes the first time round.
Yep. Yeah. I totally agree. Cutscenes vital to a story. I would never skip it unless I was in two very specific situations. Either it's an episode of Worst Games Ever, and because it's a Worst Games Ever week, without going into spoilers about what the episode is about, perhaps you do need to skip cutscenes, because otherwise it crashes the game.
It crashes the game if you don't skip them at the end.
Or it's, and this did actually happen with, it was such a memorable game. It's gone. The name Remnant something. I played it like last month. It was on PlayStation Plus. It was the Souls-like game with guns. I talked about it. Remnant Shadows from the, you know what I mean. It's one of those. And that's exactly how I felt playing it, where I was playing it because it was co-op and I was having a laugh because I was playing with my friend. But in certain cutscenes, they were just going on and on about just nonsense, like buzzword exposition nonsense, like, "Ah, yes, well, when the Dark Arisen arrived on our shores in the year 2850, the fable seer," and I was just, I can't listen to this, I don't care, I just want to shoot things. And that's almost certainly how some people probably would approach, I don't know, like a Call of Duty game, and just be like, "This is nonsense, I don't care."
Yeah.
And that's fair enough, as you said, it's proclivities, but there are certain experiences where I am not in it for the story, and it doesn't happen very often, and it's usually a game I've got for free that hasn't reviewed very well, should we say. And when I say very well, I mean like it's not a blockbuster narrative adventure. And I will want to skip those because I just don't really care about what's going on. But certainly in a narrative-driven game, I would not skip those. I think you're totally right about the option to pause cutscenes. Vital. I encounter this issue all the time when I'm streaming, and I'm sure you do too.
Yes.
You're watching a cutscene, and then someone's very, very kindly donates, or there's a super chat, and suddenly you've got two conversations over the top of each other, and there's nothing you can do. And in some games, you can press like the home button on the PlayStation controller, and it'll take you back to obviously the main menu of the console, and it will actually suspend the game as is, and that's sort of like a cheeky workaround. But for some games, it just keeps playing in the background where you can't even see it.
Yeah.
And it's just, there needs to be a standard for that. But certainly on a repeat play, I think skipping is absolutely warranted. Certainly when I've gone for trophy runs, going for the platinum in especially Uncharted games, you can skip those cutscenes. It often masks a loading screen.
Yeah,
but if you skip it, it usually loads way before the end of the cutscene, so you can just skip, and it'll say, "Hang on a minute, Okay, now you can skip. So, yeah, there we are.
Yeah. Well, it's not unusual
to have fun with anyone.
To have fun with anyone, or for us to agree on an answer like that.
Uncommon, right?
On this podcast, it happens a lot. But something that doesn't happen very often is perhaps an unusual news story. You know, they come around very rarely.
Yeah, never.
See where I'm going? Am I?
It's weird news.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Weird news time. Peter, what's your weird video game news this week?
Well, I've got something here from... I've got a write-up from fraghero.com.
Oh, I love that website. I want to be clear. I don't want to disparage their, I'm sure, fine work. I've never heard of their website, though.
No. So I saw this on Twitter yesterday, and I think since then we've actually been sent it by a couple of people. So thanks to everyone who sent it. But this is the one that I saw posted from someone I follow or something. So fraghero.com. Experts predict what gamers' hands will look like in the future.
Okay. I've seen the tweet.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
This is from Joshua Boyles at fraghero.com. Experts have predicted how gamers' hands might evolve to fit controllers of the future, and it's quite bizarre. I'm going to stop everyone immediately here and say, why are the hands evolving to fit the controllers of the future? Surely the controllers are built to suit human hands so that we don't need to evolve. But
this is like that weird marketing thing for a casino. Do you remember that we covered ages ago where they designed what a gamer would look like if it evolved just to do... It's like, that's not how that works.
Well, Ben, let me stop you right there with the next sentence. The casino review site...
What? They know how to play the game. Fair play to them. They know how to trend.
They do. The casino review site Slotswise has teamed up with scientific experts. There aren't any air quotes around that.
Scientific experts.
I'm going to take some liberties. To create a 3D model of what our descendants' hands will look like if we keep up the gaming habit.
No.
I'm now going to send you two images, Ben, on Slack. Of course, those of you listening, which is all of you, the YouTube version of this list, this podcast. I'm not functioning today, by the way. I'm really struggling.
Hey, it's okay. We'll get through this.
Thank
you.
That
is hideous, and he's using a Duke controller.
He is basically using a Duke controller. It's got like loads of big shoulder buttons. There it is. Two pictures there.
What are those fingers on the end there? His little finger and the one next to it.
The ring finger.
Yeah, those two, they've seemingly shrunk over time. That wouldn't. I don't like.
And his
this
first
is not
two fingers
science works.
Are twice as long. His thumbs are really chunky.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you are to those listening at home, if you head to the YouTube version of this podcast, the link to this article will be in the description, mm-hmm. Or you can just Google it and it will come up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you can see it yourselves. They predict that both our index and middle fingers will extend enormously. This is supposedly to be able to press more buttons on the back and top of our controllers. At the same time, these experts say that our little and ring fingers will shrink to allow us to better grip the controller. Our thumbs will apparently stretch extremely far and look to be far more muscular, presumably to provide more precise control over joystick movements.
Oh. Someone needs to explain. I mean, I know a lot of people understand how evolution works, but just in case you don't, we would need to live in a society or a situation where gaming and your ability to play games was the only deciding factor in whether or not you would pass on your genes to the next generation and everybody else would be killed. That would be the only way where slowly, over the course of millennia, appendages would adapt to the point where the people who were best suited to playing games
are the fittest,
survival of the fittest. If the fittest are the people who can get the most headshots,
yeah,
this isn't going to happen.
I mean, the only other way that evolution happens is either by natural selection like that or sexual selection. So if women, or men are going to be extremely attracted to other men or women who are excellent at video gaming.
Absolutely.
Then they will select those partners and perhaps, you know, over time, the fingers will extend. But
and you've got to imagine the long two-fingered women and men of the world will find each other irresistible as well. And then you're off to the races, aren't you? That's
absolutely
how we create the super gamers of the future.
But I don't really want to think about what they get up to in the bedroom with hands like that. You do?
Yeah. Okay. They're getting honey out of hives. And I think they're also trying to get grubs out of like rotting
logs.
Wood. And
Perhaps ask casino review site Slotswise to come up with how we will all look if we become excellent lovers over the next 1,000 years.
Oh, man. I don't want to know who their... Actually, I kind of do. Name and shame. Who are their science experts? Who's enabling them?
Let's see. I can name and shame the company, the casino company, because that is the next sentence in the read. UK-based Cornelius Creative Limited is an agency that develops and markets gaming products like controllers. Managing director Simon Cornelius told Slotswise... Oh, no, that's not... No, that's someone else. They've got an expert on controllers in to talk to Slotswise. So Simon Cornelius of this controller marketing company says, "Controllers, as they stand, are ergonomically designed. However, the increased immersive experience of some games require more buttons to play. As the increase of buttons on the controllers means our fingers, specifically thumb, index and middle, are doing more work and must stretch further..." And then that's the end of the sentence.
Right.
So thank you, Cornelius. Cornelius expects these changes will allow gamers... Maybe he is the scientist. I don't know. It doesn't make it clear who the scientific experts are, but he might be the one. I think it could be him.
He could be the science man. In a future where everyone plays guitar, look for your dominant hand to actually morph into just a fin so that you can strum the strings.
Or a whole guitar.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I think the scientific experts are actually just a guy who works for a marketing agency for controllers. I think that's what we're dealing with here. As a result, Cornelius expects that these changes will allow gamers to perform more actions much more quickly than we are currently able to. The research found that professional first-person shooter players have a reaction speed of around 100 to 250 milliseconds. With the gamer hands, in capitals, it's expected that those numbers could decrease even further, making esports an even more competitive scene. I mean... Would reaction times be improved with these hands? Surely that's more of a cranial thing.
I don't know. Just because you've got those appendages doesn't mean you can use them. You'd still need to train them.
Yeah.
Right? You're not born able to play video games. You gotta learn. You gotta learn the controls first.
You gotta learn the controls first. The article ends with just saying, it's not the first time this has happened. There was an image of what gamers in 2040 will look like and circulate on social media not long ago. So there we go. Yeah. That's the one.
Brilliant. Wow, that was very weird. Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome. Thank you to everyone who sent it to us as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Here we go. What do you think of this? I'm going to need you to click on that and tell me what you make of it.
I mean, the URL is quite incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, do you want me to watch the video?
You can just play it. Let me know when you're looking at it and I'll start reading.
I'm looking at it, yeah.
Okay. This is from PCGamer.com.
Oh my God, look at them.
Katie Wickens, who writes this headline. This guy's PC's got more bugs than Cyberpunk 2077. Having been away for a month, this Reddit user waddled her... I don't know what it says waddle. Why they got just absolutely dunk on this guy like that? This user idioted home in the hopes of getting some PC gaming in, only to discover his CPU and GPU had been overrun with what commenters have identified as crazy ants.
Crazy ants.
After a drawn-out session of pulling apart his rig in a panic, blasting them maniacally with compressed air and putting it all back together again, the ants appear to have regained their new territory. He's now taken to oiling parts of it up to prevent them from crawling up. It's a strange day when you have to lube up your PC just to get some gaming done, but it's likely going to take more than that to deter these... There's a video auto-playing on this article, and I hate that. It's really distracting me. It's likely going to take more than that to deter these creepy crawlies. Apparently, these kinds of ants are notorious for getting into electronic devices. All across the net are strewn stories of their marching not two by two, but in apocalyptic numbers towards tech. They nestle themselves deep within the circuitry of TVs, vacuum cleaners, and monitors alike, and thrum along with the electricity like they're feeding off it. They aren't, for the record, it says here. A Texas entomologist told the New York Times, "You figure these stories are laced with hyperbole, but when you get in there, it's unreal. Piles of dead ants will accumulate around infestation sites like coffee grounds, sometimes the size of molehills. These are called middens and are actually intentionally designed grave sites for their fallen kin. If you know anything about ants, you'll know that killing an ant doesn't deter further infestation. It's not like hanging pirates along the shoreline to ward off potential raids. No, the pheromone released upon an ant's expiration, oleic acid, just serves to attract more of the buggers. One little splatted creature will often result in a swarm of vengeful brethren running to their fallen comrade's aid." So there we are, it goes on. But what do you make of that video? Can you describe what you're seeing?
Well, I mean, there's just loads of ants crawling. I mean, it's the speed at which they're moving. Normally, ants sort of, well, not normally necessarily, but often I've seen ants just kind of ambling along a patio or a pub bench, you know, or something. I mean, that's 2 years ago we're talking now, stories of the pub. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just something you see on a summer's day when you're out in the garden. But they're just... It is an infestation. They're moving all over the thing. I really like... So you sent me a link to a Reddit post about it. Mm-hmm. And the post is entitled... "My CPU/GPU got infested by ants when I was gone for a month." It then talks about how they tried to remedy the situation. "I played games and ran benchmarks so that they would come out because of the heat.
Yeah.
Also, I left my PC running overnight, but they are still inside. Help." I love the idea that this guy just ran the most intensive stuff as possible to try and burn the ants out of there.
Yeah, to try and flush them out so he could get them. One of the comments on this on this PC Gamer article does say, "This happens all the time. Just call a professional. We can fix this. No need to oil up your PC." So if it does happen to you, maybe call an exterminator and hopefully they can come sort that out. It's just weird. I didn't know ants were... apparently it's an issue in North America, so we're probably safe. But there's an issue with ants just going after technology.
Electronics. Yeah, that's so weird. Strange. What are they... I wonder why they're attracted to
it. What do they want? Are they learning? Yeah. Maybe they're trying to copy us so they can have little ant televisions.
Ah, lovely.
That's nice to think about, isn't it? Let's move on to another question, Peter.
Let's, let me just, there it is. It's from Axel's Alive 95. Hey boys, or girls, long time listener, first time questioner. After last week's sponsor, I started thinking about the current status of E3. Even before COVID, they were going downhill. What should they do to remain relevant? Going digital this year is understandable considering, but is staying digital viable? I'd miss the show floor and the huge theatre presentations. From the cost of booth space to wooing back companies, how can they survive? Oh. Thank you, Axel.
Firstly, it's worth saying we actually did a video on this last year. No, 2019.
Oh, yeah, what was last year? Yeah, I don't know.
All about what the future holds for E3 and how it stacks up against, direct streams. So it's, while obviously COVID happened last year and there was no E3, it's still really relevant. We put out a tweet the weekend just gone, re-promoting it. So even though it's a little older, we actually go into a lot of detail there about what could happen and the issues that E3 is facing. So I would highly recommend you go and watch that. It is on the channel. So go there. But what do you think, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, not to cover too much of the old ground that we did in that video, I do kind of think that there's something to be said for the little directs and stuff, certainly from the point of view of a publisher or a developer, in that at least they know that they can have control. They can pre-record everything and they can think, is this what we want? Yes, this is how we want it to go. We'll put this out. It's all been okayed and green-lit. Whereas, you know, E3 particularly is infamous for weird, awkward, embarrassing things happening on stage, tech issues. That YouTuber who just went, Need for Speed.
Oh, Jesse, what's his name?
Yeah, Jesse something or other. That was painful to watch. And there've been many other things like that. So at least just having it all digital and pre-recorded, you know what you're dealing with. I mean, that's not to stop people doing their own mini presentations that are still done on some kind of stage. I remember when Gearbox did that a couple of years ago that we watched, and they did some magic tricks on.
Oh, that was the worst. Like, that was, we covered that in one of our first Triple Jump podcast, and we could not believe the state. Like, that is how bad it can be. It was awful.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you could still have things like that if E3 was gone, because people could just say, well, we're going to do our own thing. It's not E3, but we're still going to do it on stage. We're going to rent out a big conference place. And in some ways it's kind of nice to think that they won't be gone forever, because as awkward as they are to watch, they make for good discussions. And sometimes it's nice, the schadenfreude, I guess, to sit and watch that. But you know, it is nice to, as I'm sure you're about to say, it's nice to have our video games Christmas, isn't it? This is the day where, or, you know, a couple of days where everything happens. We can all get really excited, and there's, you know, fun videos and articles online about, here's everything you need to know. You know, if you missed a certain presentation, here's just like all the embedded trailers in an article. It's nice to just have a big fix of loads of things all together. And the problem with the direct style things is that they happen periodically throughout the year, which in a way is good, because you get lots of mini Christmases with like little bits and bobs, little tidbits. But it means that quite often you'll sit down to watch some kind of direct, if that's what we're calling them, and it might not be that exciting. There might be like one big thing at the end that you're like, oh great, and then everything else is just an update to a live service game, and we're bringing out the soundtrack for this game. It's now available on Spotify. And, you know, it can be a bit lackluster at times. So it's, in some ways, it'd be nicer to have one great big celebration annually. Even if people didn't do them all together at E3, if everyone just did their own E3 style thing, perhaps on a different date spread throughout the year. But, you know, so those are my thoughts on if E3 goes. I mean, I guess I can come back in a bit when you've given yours, but on what E3 might have to do if it wants to stick around. But how would you feel about a lack of E3 and more directs?
Well, we, for better or worse, we did all have that last year, didn't we, with COVID. There was, E3 sort of bowed out and said, you know, oh, the pandemic, eh? No E3, despite the fact that actually they were facing so many other issues that
it
probably
was just a good excuse.
It was a really, really good out for them. But yeah, I've got to say, I did miss E3 last year. It was overwhelming, the sheer amount of different conferences and streams, your Summer Games Fest, your Gamescom opening night live, your State of Plays, your mini directs, your everything at Ubisoft did various things. There was Marvel Avengers War tables, there was Xbox ID, there was all sorts of stuff. It was constant. And in a way, that was kind of nice because we just got a lot all the time. But there's something special about having it all be during one week, when that's when all the news will happen. You know, you get some snacks in and you stay up late with your friends and you sass on it and on Twitter, you
make
tweet
some
along.
Predictions.
You make some predictions, you give birth to a legend. We still miss you, Dick.
Yeah.
And there's something inherently good about that. The problem is with E3 coming back is that they need to convince everyone to be there again and not do that stuff, because now after being forced into doing it, every company is acutely aware that they don't have to be at E3 and they can do it from home. They may not get as much attention as if they were at E3, but equally, if they were at E3, they have to fight for attention with everyone else. So there's positives and negatives to it, and I understand companies maybe wanting to play both sides and do both things and be at E3 and also announce things during the year. But I mean, speaking as a PlayStation fan, the last few State of Plays have been very underwhelming, because they don't need to pack in loads of big blockbuster announcements. They just, a lot of them just read like marketing. I mean, I know that's what E3 is, but yeah. You know, the big stage presence and the theater of it all was always quite exciting. Whereas when you're watching from home and you've got another trailer for Abe's Odyssey, Soulstorm, or whatever, you know, it's like, I don't need to see this anymore. You can stop showing me this now. And you can tell that they've just had a handshake agreement and presumably a lot of money has exchanged hands in it, and they've agreed, you will show this game on 3 State of Plays, please. And by the time you, like the bloody Five Nights at Freddy game, how many times do we need to see a trailer for that in a State of Play?
And yet we're not really seeing much about it. They're all kind of, it doesn't actually show us that much that,
we're not. A lot of these, you can very cynically and probably accurately look at them and go, there was no need for this at all.
Yeah.
We didn't need this. Why not save up your announcements for one big blowout at the same time? As I said at the beginning of this question, we did cover all the angles available in the video that you can watch on the channel. But I like E3. I would love for it to come back, but unless they get everyone to come back, I think we're going to get E3 and still get all of the other stuff as well, which presumably is only going to serve to dilute the impact and the size of the significance of the announcements that E3 brings. So I don't know. It'll be very different, that's for sure.
It will. I suppose you're right. Like, just to put it simply, if E3 wants to carry on and still be a big deal, they need to convince everyone to come back. And I don't think they're going to do that. I think there's an interesting point where you say, you know, you don't have to compete if you do your own mini direct style conference or something like that. You can choose when to do it. But equally, you know, yes, you have to compete if everyone's at E3. But if not many people are at E3, then you won't be competing as much. So I can imagine that, I don't know, it seems like a Microsoft move, for example, or maybe Bethesda or something like that will probably still go to E3 if they can, because if other people aren't there, then they kind of get like all of the attention. Anyone who wants to watch E3 will watch, you know, the couple of big conferences or, you know, kind of presentations that are included, and you won't have, because sometimes those things run almost in tandem and you almost have to choose, like, oh, which one do I want to watch? So I can imagine like certain companies thinking, oh, well, if those people are backed out of E3, we could turn up there and kind of have most of the limelight. So there's that. And then the alternative is of that is that what EA Play have done for 2 years now?
Not counting last year, of course.
Yeah, last year doesn't really count, actually. But yeah, they kind of do E3, but not. Like, they're not actually at E3.
They're in a car park next door.
Next door, and they do it, like, the night before E3 officially starts. So they're basically just saying, we're first, one else has anything else to watch, so they're all going to watch us.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone can do that, because otherwise you then just, you know, piggyback over each other in reverse, whatever a reverse leapfrog is. Yeah, if E3 wants to carry on, they're going to have to convince people to be to return. And now that everyone's had a taste of how perhaps, I would argue, cheap and simple it is to do your own thing and to have that control, then they might be tempted to just carry on doing that.
Mm-hmm. Microsoft is going to be there. They've actually, they're pretty much spearheading the, as we're going to talk about in our big discussion, they are spearheading the, hey, come on, guys, let's all be friends movement that is endearing them in a lot of people's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been very loudly saying, yeah, we'll be at E3, can't wait to see you all there. I think it does make a big difference that I think the Microsoft Microsoft has a big stake in the ESA, I believe, and they're heavily involved in it, so it's to their benefit that it would succeed, ESA being the organizers of E3. And again, citation needed. I think either some key people involved in Xbox or members of the ESA or vice versa, whatever. They just need to get everyone back. I don't know that they will, though. Mm. But we will see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Right, it's time to move on to a... Are you ready? To a big discussion.
A big discussion.
It's big discussion time. This big discussion comes courtesy of John Oliver. But Dan Clapper and Richard Major also asked similar questions. Here we go. Hi, lads. Hope all is well. After reading Bloomberg's recent article, it says embedded below, but we've also stuck it in the link dump if you want to see it. It seems Sony are no longer focused on smaller titles and are instead focusing primarily on their blockbuster experiences. I was wondering whether you feel this is smart, on Sony's behalf. If this is the approach, it could have negative connotations, e.g. less frequent exclusives, fewer genre choices for fans, causing unrest for internal developers. Sony's PR has been pretty poor recently, teetering towards the launch days of the PS3 levels of bad, and I don't think this recent news has helped. With that being said, do you feel it's worth it for Sony to deliver excellent games on a less frequent basis? Many thanks, lads, and take care. So we've got a little quote from the article in question. I don't know if you want to tackle this, Peter.
Sure. So this is written by Jason Schreier at Bloomberg. Sony's obsession with blockbusters is stirring unrest within PlayStation Empire. Sony's focus on exclusive blockbusters has come at the expense of niche teams and studios within the PlayStation organization, leading to high turnover and less choice for players. Last week, Sony reorganized a development office in Japan, resulting in mass departures of people who worked on less well-known but acclaimed games, such as Gravity Rush and Everybody's Golf. The company has informed developers that it no longer wants to produce smaller games that are only successful in Japan, Bloomberg has reported. Goodness me.
So there we are. That's sort of the state of things. There's seemingly, and this is sort of the area that the other questions went into, but it's all very relevant. There's seemingly a sort of air of anti-PlayStation going around at the moment in the core gaming space. And I'm not saying that it's unwarranted, because they've made several questionable decisions recently. I've got a few here before I ask you what you think about all this, Peter.
Yeah, well, Sony... you might be about to say one of the things I was about to bring up, do go ahead.
Okay, so Sony's effectively shuttered Studio Japan, losing loads of talent in the process. Sony Bend, who made Days Gone, have been told not to make a Days Gone sequel and instead were put to work on something else as a support studio, which they have since backed out of. I think it was something to do with Uncharted. There's a Last of Us 1 remake in the works.
Yeah, that was
PS3, PSP and Vita stores are going to be shuttered. There's this now supposed focus on big blockbuster games, ignoring all smaller niche projects. And then on the other hand, Xbox are absolutely nailing the gamer-first approach with all of their marketing and messaging, as PlayStation did last generation, which is why they were probably so successful then. And Finally, and I imagine there's probably more, MLB The Show 21 is on Xbox for the first time and free on Game Pass when PlayStation owners have to pay like 60, 70 quid for it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff. They're sort of getting pummeled in the public space. And again, it's worth saying that people who just play games recreationally do not know or care about what is going on here.
Yeah.
But certainly in the core gaming space, the people listening to this podcast, the people who are interacting on Twitter, reading the news websites, they know what's going on. And Sony are not coming out smelling like roses at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the one that really kind of spelled it out or typified the whole thing was the news of this Last of Us 1 remake. Like, it just beggars belief. You know, Naughty Dog are one of, I think, the best first-party studios for Sony right now. But it takes them ages to make games. And, you know, fair enough, they produce excellent ones, you know, when the games are finally done. But it takes them a long time to make games. And they were working on The Last of Us Part 2 for ages. And now what's been announced is, oh yeah, the next thing we're working on is a remake of the first Last of Us. That doesn't need remaking. It was remastered already, and the remaster is great. It looks fantastic still, I think. And, you know, that game plays, I mean, relatively similarly to the sequel. So I really don't think that is necessary at all. But for some reason, that's what they're doing. And it's like they're scared to delve into anything that's not proven. And actually, let's be honest, some people really hated The Last of Us Part 2. We didn't, and we don't understand the hate. We know why some of the hate is leveled at it, and we think those reasons are ridiculous. But even if you didn't like the game purely from some kind of gameplay or technical point of view, the fact is that that game kind of split the crowd in some ways. So it seems a really strange move to actually say, well, we're going to work on a Last of Us 1 remake now. It's kind of symptomatic of the whole attitude at the moment, which is to close down, you know, studios behind the likes of Everybody's Golf, which, I mean, is that like, it confused me really to say that, oh, we don't want you working on games that are only successful in Japan. I think Everybody's Golf, as an example, is, you know, it's a successful enough game in the West. Maybe it's
or
much
Hot
bigger
Shots
over
Golf,
there.
If you want to get American.
Well, yeah, sure. You know, perhaps it's way more successful in Japan. And, you know, I can imagine the same can be said of Gravity Rush, that is much more successful towards the East. But it's sad. It seems like creative stifling to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's saying, we know that this works. And, you know, they're getting into dangerous territory in terms of they're not so far away from the kind of attitudes that people already crap all over from the likes of Ubisoft or EA. You know, it's well established that Ubisoft rarely step outside of their now well-established Ubi Worlds template. And EA, although they don't quite have an EA Worlds template that they apply to every game, they certainly rely on certain crutches and say, well, we're always going to put this thing in our games. Frostbite Engine is one. Yeah, exactly. So for PlayStation to, I mean, they're not quite doing the same thing, saying we're going to make all the same games, but to say we only want to work on these huge major blockbusters, and we want to do, for example, a Last of Us 1 remake now because we know people like The Last of Us, it kind of feels like they're scared to venture out and do anything interesting or new, try anything new and experiment.
Mm. Very quickly, to go back to The Last of Us 1 remake, do I think it needs a remake? No, of course it doesn't.
Yeah.
No, it just doesn't. Do I think there's a very specific reason why they're doing it? Yes, and I think it's the TV show.
Right,
I think
sure,
when that comes out and people can see that they can play through a recently remade first game, I think it's a waste of resources. I think it's silly, especially as the report does detail that I think it was in development at a different place initially before being absorbed into Naughty Dog.
Yeah, that's right.
Just a total waste of these teams' resources. Like, if you're going to do it, keep it in one place. You know, this probably should have just been developed internally at Naughty Dog and left there, made by a side team or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But when this HBO show comes out, it's going to be huge. Equally, though, The Witcher Netflix show was huge for The Witcher 3. Now, The Witcher 3 is, of course, more recent than The Last of Us. The Last of Us 1 is 8 years old, which is shocking to think
about.
It is,
in its original form, yeah.
It's still not old enough to warrant a remake, of course, but The Witcher 3 didn't need to be remade or remastered to, as we covered in a list, sell more since the show came out than it had sold up to that point, I believe. So it's... the Last of Us 1 remastered would probably have sold extremely well. They didn't need to remake it.
No.
But that may well be their reasoning, just to throw that point out there as well.
Yeah, the TV show, that's a good point.
And also, to provide a bit of balance, there was actually a really good article on Push Square from Sammy Barker, and I'll stick this in the link dump as well, where he sort of... He writes almost a response to the Bloomberg article. It's called, "I don't think Sony's obsession with PS5 blockbusters aligns with reality." And I'm not saying that I agree with this, but I'm just want to read it for balance.
Yeah, like absolutely.
A differing opinion here. The next three PlayStation 5's exclusives on Sony's first-party docket are MLB The Show 21, and on Xbox, Returnal, and Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, a baseball simulation, a bullet hell roguelike, and the long-awaited successor to Insomniac Games' mascot platformer property. The previous three, in case you're curious, were Destruction All-Stars, Sackboy A Big Adventure, and Demon's Souls. The latter two were launch titles alongside Astro's Playroom and, yes, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales. Before that, Ghost of Tsushima. I'm sorry, but this emerging narrative that Sony is obsessed with only the biggest of its brands does not align with reality, at least not right now, anyway. He does go on to point out that while it could have been promoted a lot more, Sony supported and continued to support Dreams, and I think the Bloomberg article talks about that as well. And that he believes implicitly that while there are employees at Sony, both past and present, who are disgruntled with occurrences unfolding internally, which obviously are the people that Jason Schreier spoke to, that may not reflect the majority. So there's just a different perspective there, because it is worth pointing out that actually Sony does produce a wide variety of stuff, even if the reporting recently has proven that actually maybe their focus at the moment is largely on sequels. But I think the big problem for me is that Xbox are just smashing it on the messaging front. They've got a really good social media team. They've got a really good marketing team. They've got all the money in the world, and they can buy whatever they want.
Yeah.
And that it's just seen, again, in the core gaming space. Outside of it, people don't really understand or know what's going on. But in the core gaming space, that's seen as a win after win after win. And Sony is setting, you know, they are making mistakes, seemingly. I'm trying to think of the term, like putting a wrong foot. That's not it, is it?
Foot wrong. Yeah, I don't know.
They are doing that with things like the store shuttering and stuff. But I think the amount of mistakes they're making aren't really that big. It's just the fact that Xbox are doing so well at the moment with their messaging that's sort of making them look worse by comparison, even though really they're not doing all that much wrong. I think there's just a lot of people are seeing Xbox do well and thinking, well, when's Sony going to do something big like buy Bethesda? When are they going to do that? And it's like they can't. Oh, they're shuttering the store. Oh, bloody hell, Sony, for God's sake. Yeah, I think there is an element of that to this. And I think the problem is that Sony just need to talk to us more. I think that's the big problem. They're losing sort of the war for faith with the core gamers. Xbox is striking big victory after big victory, and Sony is seemingly scoring own goal after own goal. But while the optics may not be great, they're still producing phenomenal games on PlayStation, even if they are, as suggested, just blockbuster after blockbuster, which is straining their internal teams and putting people off and making people leave. And the PS5 is worth mentioning, outselling the Series X/X by quite a lot, per GameIndustry.biz. Data from Ampere Analysis, I'm all over the place with my brain this morning, suggests that Xbox Series X/X has sold 2.8 million units since launching in November. lagging a bit behind the Xbox One during the same post-launch timeframe at 2.9 million units. Meanwhile, the PS5 has matched the performance of the PS4, which shifted 4.2 million units in its first few months after launching in November 2013. So despite all of this, the PS5 is still doing really well. Sony's still doing really well, making really good games. It's just in this core space, they are not communicating with us well enough. And it's clear that they need to communicate more and have perhaps a relatable executive in the limelight, because Jim Ryan, the current boss, is getting a ton of flack at the moment. But he has been there for a very long time, and I believe he knows what he's doing. However, Shuhei Yoshida, Kaz Hirai, Andrew House, Adam Boyes, Jack Tretton, and Sean Layden were all very personable, and they were sort of adopted and loved by the core gaming community. I'm not saying they need to get rid of Jim Ryan. I don't think that would be a good idea, but they do need someone up front who the core audience can engage with, and someone who can communicate to them. And they just need to talk to us again. Remember last year where they didn't talk about the PS5 until like a month before it came out? They've never been so unpredictable, and I think that is to their detriment. But I don't think they are there, should we say, being arrogant. As someone who lived and endured that period, I don't think they are back being arrogant Sony from 2006. I think they are just really bad at their messaging at the moment, and they need to get a new team in to run that.
They certainly feel more like a faceless corporation than Microsoft do at the moment, and Nintendo, I would say. They just feel a bit more like, yeah, they're doing good stuff. They're achieving, and they're putting out good quality products and services. But, you know, so do Amazon and, you know, Google and stuff. It's not that bad, of course. I'm being hyperbolic there. But, they feel less like you could sit down and have a chat with Sony than you could with Xbox, I would say, with Microsoft. To go back to the article you quoted there from Push Square, I think I absolutely agree that at the moment, the library, I do think recent releases, I do think are varied, and, you know, they're delving into different genres, and they're not necessarily pushing for these blockbuster games, and that's where their interest is exclusively. But I think my response initially is, you know, taking the Bloomberg article at face value, taking them on their word, and if it's more of a prediction of the future, then certainly I would, you know, I say, well, that's not a good thing, and I hope that's not the case, and so on and so forth. But, you know, it does mean that you do have to trust what is kind of just rumors and, you know, just claims made by people in the industry. Could very well be exactly what's happening. It might be a bit exaggerated. So we'll have to hope it's the latter. And yeah, I agree that at the moment the library is still diverse enough, and I don't feel like there's this heavy weighting towards kind of major, like huge AAA blockbuster games. And long may that continue. But it's a worrying thing to hear that there's this perhaps some animosity towards Sony on the inside at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think Sony doesn't help themselves, as we've talked about a few times earlier in the episode. They have had a habit of making some very questionable calls. Yeah. And again, you know, none of us are on the inside, so we don't really know what the long-term planning is. The shuttering of the PS3, PSP, and Vita stores could lead to backwards compatibility. Equally, knowing Sony, it probably won't, and that'll just be the end of it, and those games that are at risk of being lost will just be lost forever, and that'll be terrible. However, I think it's very easy to get swept up in the doom and gloom and to jump on the bandwagon. Not that Sony are in need of defending or protecting, that's not what I'm saying. You know, they're a multi-million, probably billion-dollar company. They'll be fine. Yeah. They don't need people sticking up for them. But I would urge caution that while Xbox is doing so well on the messaging and Sony is doing so poorly on the messaging, maybe to try and just take a step back, because it can be very easy to get swept up in that and just be like, oh, Sony, they're throwing it all away. It's arrogant Sony from 2006. It may well end up being arrogant Sony from 2006, but certainly from where I'm sitting right now, and remembering what that was like, it's not that. I think it's just Sony is still doing really good stuff, and you know, their pricing, I mean, the games could be cheaper for sure, but their pricing is acceptable. The price of their console is competitive. I just think they need to talk to us more. I think that's the largely the issue here, and a lot of these problems would go away if they had someone that people could look at and go, oh, it's Tingle, it's Tingle Flim. There he is. Everyone loves Mr. Flim. And that's the Sony guy, and he's tweeting about how they're going to buy EA. Yes, Tingle Flim, get it. You know, if Sony had that money to throw around and they just bought Capcom, for example,
yeah,
you know, the conversation would be totally different. But they don't have that money. So what they can do is talk to us, and they're not doing that.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. It's and even just, you know, Microsoft had that... They had that kind of roundtable chat thing that went out a couple of weeks ago now, where I think they were talking about the Bethesda acquisition and stuff, but I think they talked more generally as well about Microsoft and Xbox and so on. And just seeing like just a bunch of people sitting around, kind of representing the company, having a chat. You don't get that from Sony. Sony don't sit around and just with a load of famous faces and, you know, kind of say, hey, so what do you guys love about, you know, being members of Sony? But they do need Tingle McFlim or whoever it is.
Tingle Flim.
Could they get like Shinji Mikami? Remember? Shinji Mikami from Ghostwire Tokyo reveal?
Of course.
Very charismatic and endearing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just... push her to the moon.
Oh no, that's not Shinji Mikami. That was Kasumi something else. Shinji Mikami is the guy who made Resident Evil.
Oh, it is. Yeah, no, not Shinji Mikami. Yeah,
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember her full name.
Ikumi
Nakamura.
Nakamura.
Did I say Kasumi? That's not right. Yakumi. Yeah, something Nakamura.
I mean, we're just
Kasumi. I don't know. I don't bloody know. It was something like that. Anyway.
It was Ikumi Nakamura. Yeah.
She's gone now. She's not there anymore. Anyway, but
no, I know she hasn't. Yeah.
Can we get her back?
Shinji Mikami, I think, was there at the Ghostwire Tokyo thing.
Yes, but, he was. He was.
But was
there.
Not Ikumi Nakamura at all.
No, he didn't do the dance that she did.
No.
He's
not
the
a woman.
He is not a woman. But yeah, I don't know. It's a really weird place. I do think, again, taking a step back, this is purely a fight for the faith of the core gamers, which in the grand scheme of things isn't necessarily that vital. However, as I said earlier, PS4 era Sony really nailed the, you know, for the players. They really made it all about us. Mm. And now Xbox is doing that. And Sony aren't. And I think that's a big misstep. And of course, there's also the fact that after, say, 3 or 4 years, Xbox has got all these acquisitions up and running. They will have potentially an exclusive Xbox game out maybe every 3 months. And
yeah,
Sony don't have the money to do that, but they do have the money to, because they've done it before, hire a good marketing team. And I don't know if they've still got that team or what, but someone needs to come in and talk to them about PR because, you know...
But definitely not the PSP marketing team.
Not the PSP marketing
please,
team.
Please, no.
No, don't need that. But anyway, it's a complicated issue. And we ended up talking a lot more about the state of Sony in general, which I think was the natural direction of that conversation anyway from John. But hopefully we covered a lot of bases there. I do urge you to read the Bloomberg article and the Push Square article as well, just to offer a bit of pushback. But let us know what you think. I know it's very easy to get swept up in console alliances and your preferred platforms and stuff, but we always try to provide a very balanced view. And even though we have a preference, it doesn't mean we can't criticize what we like. So please do let us know where you fall on this and what you make of it all and whether it's overblown or whether this is the one of the final nails in the coffin for Sony and they're going to fold next week because Xbox is buying them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let us know in the comments. Peter, where can people find us?
Team Triple Jump, that's who we are. We're at youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump, where we put out our videos and do our live streams. When we stream, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger. And talking of Twitch, remember you can get sort of bundled in with your Amazon Prime that you may already be paying for. one of the benefits is a Twitch sub that you get. It's just part of the price. So consider spending that on us if you like. It won't cost you anything extra. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon looking after Facebook for us and doing a great job as usual. Thank you, Luke. Our Patreon is patreon.com. I'm losing my voice. patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. Where there's all kinds of rewards that are worth checking out. You can ask questions on this podcast, for example, but there's lots of other things too. Our Discord you can get to via the handy link bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. Jack and Joe are our mods over there. Thank you, Jack and Joe. The podcast, if you're watching on YouTube, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/Triple Jump. The website is triplej.mup, that's triplej.mp. If you go to triplej.mup/VODs, that will redirect you to our YouTube channel where we put all of our VODs and where Pat puts weekly highlights together of those VODs. There's also a careers tab on that webpage, which certainly at time of recording, and I'm sure probably at time of publishing, will still have some job ads on there that are live. We did say at the time that we would get back to people within 14 days. If you have applied and you're worried that we've not got back to you, don't worry. Please don't worry. We're just waiting to see just how many applicants we can get because we want to, you know, pick from as big a pool as possible. But that's not to say that someone who's already applied will not be the successful one. So fear not. There have been lots of good applications already. Mm-hmm. And finally, of course, we've got a new shop-ish. It's triplejumpshop.com. You can go to @triplejumpshop on Twitter for updates on when new merch is coming. And actually, Ben and I saw a new t-shirt design yesterday. I saw it this morning. So that's coming, I guess, soon-ish, whenever the next drop is. Yeah.
We need to get the rest of the shirts ready.
Yeah, get some more stuff for the rest of the drop. But it's exciting. So those are all of our things.
It's coming. It is coming. You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter @ThatPeterAustin. Myself, just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Streams every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. Thursday being on YouTube. Friday and Monday being on Twitch. That's the name of the platform. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. Friday for patrons of a certain tier. Sunday for everyone else. It is a Worst Games Ever week this week. Podcast is every Saturday. And we do shows one every other week or thereabouts. Leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. And this week, Peter.
Yes.
It is a Worst Games week.
Yes, it is.
It's a pretty good one, I think.
It is a good one. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah. Absolutely. We also have a chat about the Evercade, which we were very kindly sent by the Evercade people.
Thank you, Evercade.
And as Peter mentioned earlier, he's been playing it. We had like a half an hour chat. So if you want to hear way more information about what the Evercade is and if you think it might be for you, then go watch that video and tell you all about it.
Yeah, do it.
And finally, Peter was off on Thursday this week, which meant I had the pleasure of doing the joint stream, Blaze It, with James, our very own James, who edits this podcast, our senior editor, does writing, does editing, looks after some of the video editors as well. And I don't know what we played, but I'm sure we played something and I'm sure it was fun. So please be very kind and nice and welcoming to James if you're watching the VOD after the fact. And thank him for being a friend. I don't really know where I was going with that.
Being a good editor.
Yeah, that too. Peter, there's just enough time to talk about this week's sponsor once again.
Yes, of course. Coming soon. No, out now. I don't know. It's all made up. God World, Abe's Goddessy.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. Could you tell that I made it up 2 minutes before we recorded the podcast because I realized it was my turn?
A little bit, yeah. I've been in that position before.
Yeah, desperately trying to think, what's relevant in the gaming sphere right now? God World, there it is. Heaven.
Perfect.
Go and sing some soul in a storm.
You could have said Gabe's Goddessy as well, like the angel Gabriel.
I could have, yeah.
Never mind. Next time. That's another one you can pull out the bag. The same one, but just with Gabe is the sequel. That is brother. Okay, thanks for listening/watching, everyone. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.